So Bhante speaks of just sitting as an integral part of his system of meditation. And he speaks of just sitting accompanying each stage. So you do the stage of integration, then just sit. Maitri Bhavana, just sit, and so on. So I'm building that into the structure of the retreat. But Bhante doesn't say that much about just sitting. He talks of it in that lecture as, in a way, balancing the others. That in the others you're making an effort, you're active in just sitting, you're passive, he says. You're not deliberately trying to do something. So what are you doing? Well, he used to just say, just sit, don't try to do anything, don't try not to do anything, which is sort of good enough, and leaves one with a nice koan to work with. But I've been thinking about it a bit because it's a practice or non-practice that I do quite a lot. And I've come to some conclusions that there are different things that go on at different times when you're doing it. I did run this past Bhante. He seemed to not disapprove. So I like to talk about, there are different justs that you can do. Some of you heard me speak about this in the chairman's retreat. I talked about five then. I've got two more. There are seven justs. The first two are justs that you should try to avoid. So they're justs that, well, in a way you do have to make an effort not to do. The first is just dreaming. So one thing that can happen when the bell goes and you're told just sitting is you slip into a sort of dreamy, dozy state with a succession of images passing through your mind, a succession of thoughts passing through your mind. It can even be quite pleasant. And I've come to the conclusion, talking to some people, that they really enjoy just sitting, but actually all they're doing is just dreaming. I think this is maybe a bit of a problem where people have learned that there's an alternative, as it were, to doing effort-based practice. So I think one needs to be careful not to use the space for just dreaming, otherwise you become habituated to it. And it's a well-known phenomenon in meditation from all schools, that you can be in a quite pleasant state. It's not really meditation. It's just because you've got a bit of positive momentum. So you kind of, it's a bit like waking up in the morning and lying in bed and not getting up. You can just sort of enjoy the sensation of lying there and being at ease, but it's not really going anywhere. There's a kind of version of that which is just drifting, the second one, which is quite close to just dreaming. But it's where you, instead of just floating along on a sort of a succession of psychic impulses arising, images and dreams and so forth, you allow yourself to become caught up with habitual patterns of thought, preoccupations and that sort of thing. So you, you know, maybe you're bothered by somebody. So you spend your just sitting period sort of thinking about them, maybe working things out. Often not working things out in a really constructive sense of dealing with the issue, but of kind of making yourself comfortable about that person. So you drift into a sort of fantasy of what's wrong with them and why you're all right, that sort of thing. So you're just drifting with the currents of your habitual tendencies. It's a little bit different, if you see what I mean. The first is where you're really almost asleep, but you're just dreaming along. The second, you're maybe quite awake, maybe even quite a lot of energy, but it's really drifting with the currents of unskillful, mildly unskillful patterns and currents in the mind. And so when you're just sitting, you do need to make an effort not to fall into these two. And in fact, if you find those are habitual, I suggest that you use some concentration. The Buddha says that if you can't remain just openly aware, what he calls apanadaya bhavana, that is a making to develop that is without a focus, unfocused awareness. If you can't remain in that, and you just dream or you just drift, then you need to do a little bit of work. What he suggests is you think of something inspiring. And in fact, he says, think of the Buddha. So you call the Buddha to mind, and you inspire yourself. Through your inspiration, you become happy. And because you're happy, you become concentrated. And then you can return to the unfocused awareness of just sitting. So, if you find that in just sitting you're drifting or dreaming, don't let it go on. That can easily become habitual. And it then starts to invade other practices. Because certainly the just dreaming can be quite pleasant. And even just drifting can be quite convincing, if you see what I mean, because you're having thoughts that seem, in some ways to resolve issues that are with you. So be careful not to fall into those two. But then we're left with five, as it were, positive versions of just sitting. And, maybe you can cut the cake up in different ways, and maybe there are other things one could say, but these five are things I've noticed in my own practice, apart from the two I've already mentioned. So, there's first of all what I call just settling. This is where your mind has been quite disturbed, maybe because you've been rushing in from something else, you've been moving around, you've been busy with something, and it takes time for your consciousness to sort of settle down where you are. But you're not just drifting. There are, the remains of the activity that you've been in are still echoing in you, and thoughts connected with them are coming in, and maybe even your energies are a little stirred. But the overall effect is gradually things are settling. A bit like a glass of water that's been filled with mud, and you're allowing it just to stand. You're not shaking it up anymore. You're allowing it just to stand, and all the mud settles to the bottom. Of course, in this instance, it doesn't just settle to the bottom. It settles and disappears, dissolves. So it's something one can do quite consciously. You recognize that you're in no fit condition to meditate yet, in a sense, properly. So you allow your mind to settle down. I think it's very important to do it before any practice. It's very important to, when you're leading, to give people the space and maybe even the guidance to settle down. We've been doing it, for instance, around becoming aware of the body. But it can be just leaving a space or just sort of talking in a positive way before you start to get into the meditation. But you can't just come in from activity, sit down and meditate. There needs to be a transition. Sometimes that transition can take quite a long time. You'll probably find that even in the course of this retreat, it's taking you a few days to settle properly. So to some extent, in everything you're doing, there's an element of settling. And I think it's a quite legitimate activity and needs to be sort of allowed for. That's why I've given it a name and incorporated it, so to speak. So it's something you do often before a meditation. It's something that sometimes you need a whole session just to settle, especially if you've been rather stirred, maybe even shaken, maybe a bit shocked or heard something unpleasant. You're not dwelling on it, but its effects are echoing in you, and you're just letting the echo gradually subside. So that's just settling. And sometimes it can take days to really settle. Then there's just waiting. You're sitting there, but nothing happening. Nothing really to engage with. So your mind kind of wants to go somewhere, wants to get involved with something, but because you're just sitting, you haven't got anything for it to get involved with. And what you need in this state is to have, well, faith that if you wait, something will begin to emerge. I really became aware of this a long time ago and made it into a sort of practice, because Bhante used to speak in the old days a lot about the positive value of boredom. Boredom as a practice. Nothing to do, or nothing going on that you can really engage with. Your energies are not engaged, nothing for your emotions to connect with, so you feel bored. It's a funny state, isn't it? Because it's not exactly negative, but it's certainly not positive. It's, if anything, it's kind of neutral, but an uncomfortable neutrality. And you feel itchy, you feel a bit antsy, as they say, and your mind sort of trying to find something to grasp onto, but nothing really takes it. And what Bhante used to say was that if you wait, if you don't try to distract yourself, if you don't try to find something else to get caught up with, something will begin to emerge. Something in you begins to unfold. The way I've been putting it in talking about the Honeyball Sutta is that a depth and richness comes into your experience. So that happens quite spontaneously, just as a result of not letting your mind kind of drift or find distraction. Because distraction is where you're not really engaged, but you're finding something to occupy your mind that prevents you from feeling the unsatisfactoriness of disengagement. You know the sort of things. Computers are terrible in this way. And it's so easy nowadays to drift into the distraction, not merely of games or something like that, but you know what. At the flick of a button, you can find yourself in a bit of engaging porn, but it's not really engaging. You're not really interested in a way, but because it makes your body sort of respond, it takes you away from the kind of emptiness of it. So many, you know, kinds of videos or the modern world is so good at delivering distraction. At a flick of a button, you can find something that takes your attention. But you try to resist that. You try to resist the inner flicks of buttons, and you try to stay with the experience of unengagement, even of boredom, and with the confidence, with the faith that something will emerge, something comes from inside you, which begins to sort of carry you along. can be particularly strong on retreat, and especially on solitary retreat, because the usual things that occupy your energies are not there. And what one needs to try to do is to, in a very gentle way, hold oneself back from getting caught up with things that sort of occupy you but don't engage you. That's right. The distraction occupies you without engaging you. And, you know, when it finishes, when the video finishes, you think, that was a bit of a waste of time. When the whatever it was you were doing on your computer ends, you think, that was a bit tacky, or a bit sort of nothing in particular. When you've defragged your computer for the 15th time, you think, well, yeah, I haven't really got anywhere. Etc. When you've gone through that, you know, really quite trivial conversation, or that spy novel, whatever it is, detective novel, we've all got our little distractions, our ways of occupying ourselves without engagement. Yes, you're left in the same state, if anything a little bit deeper. The emptiness is there again, so then you get addiction. So just waiting is staying with the experience of unengagement with the confidence that engagement will come. It's a sort of promise. There's something about the way the mind is. Maybe this is where we move a little bit into the area of if not Dhamma Niyama, then something sort of on the fringes of Dhamma Niyama. Some current begins to emerge from a bit deeper down, which engages. Sometimes it can be a bit striking, because something quite strong can come, maybe unresolved energies, but they do come, and you go with them. I've come to trust this very, very much, especially with just sitting, that I sort of know that if I stick with it for long enough, I'll get engaged without making an effort. Well, the only effort is to hold back from occupying shallowly. So that's just waiting. What comes next? Well, in a way, it's quite closely related. It's just watching. So it's got a somewhat more directed feeling to it. There's a definite effort going on, but it's an effort to remain mindful of what's going on. You might choose to isolate out a particular dimension of your experience. You might choose to simply remain with your feelings and just sort of watch them rolling along. This is really the Vedanu Smriti or Vedanu Pasana, where you're just sort of watching feelings. So it might be your sensations, but not in a very focused way. As I say, the Buddha distinguishes between Panadaya Bhavana and Apanadaya Bhavana. Panadaya Bhavana is Bhavana in the sense of development, which is focused or directed. Pana means direction, as in a pranahita or panahita, the directionless samadhi. So it's an effort which has a direction, like the mindfulness of breathing. You take an object and you focus on it. But there's another kind of bhavana, which is still an effort, which is still a work, but it's unfocused. The focus is open. And you get this spoken of with samadhi. You can have a samadhi that is focused and a samadhi that is open. And the satipatthanas are of the second kind. So you remain open to your experience, but you remain with it, but without trying to grasp onto it, simply watching it unfold. And again, this will have the effect of enriching your experience. It will slowly gather colour, life, depth, but just by watching it. With waiting, in a way you're not even watching. You're just trying to stop yourself from engaging. You're just staying with, in a way, the feeling of unengagement. But with watching, it's a little bit more specific, a little bit more, in a sense, directed, in that you're definitely watching what's going on, noting it, paying attention to it. Maybe even at times you might choose to label it if it's particularly striking. But you're definitely paying much closer attention to it. And if you can manage to get this sort of momentum going, it's quite spontaneous. It's not thought out. You're just sort of spontaneously remaining present with whatever unfolds in your experience. And it can begin to gather some depth, even some sense of meaning. You begin to notice the significance of what's unfolding. You begin to notice that it has no, no fixity, that it's impermanent, that it's got no nothing behind it. But not necessarily in any very forced way. You're just noticing the rolling on of your experience, you're remaining loose to it, and you're noticing that its character, its fundamental character. So that's just watching. The fourth of these sort of constructive or creative kinds of just sitting is just enjoying. These are all related to each other, but I'm not trying to make any sort of sequence or anything like that. They're just different ways in which you find yourself in the space of just sitting. So sometimes what you're doing is just enjoying a previously developed momentum. And probably that's what we're mainly experienced during the course of the retreat. In a way, I've broken the momentum of the previous practice by talking now. But I wanted to bring the discussion closer to just sitting. But in future, we'll be doing a session of Panadaya Bhavana, mindfulness of breathing, Maitri Bhavana, six element practice, even sadhana, visualization sadhana. And then we'll be doing a session of just sitting. So the state that you built up then resonates within you. So that you'll find, as a result of doing Maitri Bhavana, that after some time, the Maitri sort of continues reasonably spontaneously. It just echoes inside you. Once you've done the mindfulness of breathing, you remain in a state of concentration, to some extent, and it carries on. In the sadhana practice, you go through the drama of the practice, and you're left with an effect, a bit like going to see a really good film or a really good play. So you're taken through a whole experience, and when you come out, you often feel you're with the experience that you had. You don't want to sort of immediately start talking or rationalising it. You just want to stay with it. I saw the Russian Hamlet recently, Kazintsev's Russian Hamlet, a film of Hamlet. It's a very, very powerful, very Russian account of Hamlet. And it leaves you sort of positively shaken. You're really sort of moved by what you've seen, and you've experienced something. You don't want to, you don't even want to think about it, really. You just want to stay with the state that you're left in. So it's the same with the sadhana, which I consider to be a sort of a transcendental drama, a narrative that takes you through a psychic, a deep psychic experience. which leaves you in a particular state. And so you just stay with that. Those of you who do the Manjushri Stuti Sadhana, you know that at the end of that sadhana, you dissolve Manjushri back into yourself, and then the sadhana text says, you remain in samadhi so long as it lasts. So long as samatha and vipassana are both united. So there's an effect, Bhante said, that you don't think about it, you don't make it happen, you just let it go on. So with all panadaya bhavana, there's an effect. Of course there's an effect. Otherwise, why are we doing it? So we let that effect echo inside us. And I think it's a very, very important thing about all spiritual practice, all aesthetic practice too, all cultural practice, even communication, that we allow space for that to be absorbed, space for that to resonate inside us. And we need to sort of plan that in and allow for it, because the pace of modern life often means you move from experience to experience without really absorbing what you've been through. As important as the experience and the effort that leads to the experience is the echoing of the experience, the absorption of the experience, like the bell. It's not just the ringing of the bell, it's the echoing of the bell after you've rung it. So you in just sitting, you're not trying to do anything, but you let the momentum of your previous practice echo inside you. I've been fascinated by, you know, a lot of the debate going on around us in the order and so forth. And I think that one of the issues that people are trying to talk about is, what about experience? Isn't there a space for experience? Well, of course there is. If you are practicing, you will have flashes of understanding. You'll have moments of transcendence. You'll have, even whole series of experiences that go beyond your normal experience. That's to be expected. Otherwise, what's the point? It's what the spiritual life promises us. So you need to give space for that. You need to allow that. And a very, very important function of just sitting in the economy, the overall economy of our spiritual lives, is to allow for that echoing of spiritual experience. So one more, and then we'll try and do it if you're not too full of words. Which is really, in a way, just sitting proper, about which almost nothing can be said. I suppose that really what this amounts to is really sitting with at least some kind of perfect vision experience at some level or other. It means sitting at least for a while without any sense of somebody sitting there doing something. There's just a completely spontaneous sense of awareness, flowing awareness, without, in a way, anybody being aware and anything that's the object of that awareness. So you're completely awake, or there is complete wakefulness, but without, or with a very, very minimal sense of somebody being awake and something being the object of that wakefulness. There's pure observation, but without an observer or something observed. So just sitting in the highest sense is really a transcendental awareness. It's an awareness that's suffused with the greatest possible richness and depth, and the fullest possible meaning. And one can come into that from time to time. If you allow yourself to just sit, occasionally it will sort of push into these realms where you're getting some experience of a very, very deep peace. I found this becoming more and more a keynote of my long solitary retreat. I don't mean that I dwelt in that all the time, but I could sort of feel it there at the bottom of my experience. A very, very deep sense of nothing to do, nowhere to go, nothing to be done, nothing wrong, nothing right, just everything as it is in a completely satisfying way. And I was very, very inspired by Bhante's description of his first meeting with Dujom Rinpoche, who describes him at a ceremony in which he was blessing the site for a new Gompa. And he had at one point to stand completely still. And Bhante said that his impression was that it was a stillness of the body of a quite unusual order. But it wasn't just a stillness of the body. It was a stillness of the mind, just like the sea when all the waves have subsided. All the surface disturbances of the mind had completely gone. The mind is completely still to its very depths, its infinite depths. And he had the sense that this was a man who was completely at peace with himself and completely at peace with the world. So this is presumably what is meant by Dzogchen. This is what Dujom Rinpoche was supposed to be a practitioner of. He was pushing into that, just sitting in this absolutely pure sense, or just standing in this absolutely pure sense. But on the way to that, we stop just dreaming. We stop just drifting. We allow ourselves just to settle. We just wait. We just watch. And we just enjoy. And we may, from time to time, find ourselves just sitting. And that's what we're going to do now. You know, be a little bit aware. I find those labels a little bit useful. Don't, you know, impose themselves on you too heavily, because then they spoil the whole process. But they can help you to understand what's going on. So we're going to just sit in one sense or another, hopefully not in the first two senses, and just see what happens.